is In This League. Overtime. Some of the best from Chris Welsh and Scott Bogman on the In This League Podcast Network and FNTSY. Now, it's time for OT.
Very special guest. We've got Ryan Spader, who you have seen the Twitter handle. I know you have. It's a very popular one. And even if like you hadn't been 100% familiarized, this one has just always popped out. The Ace of Spader, baseball statistician, contributor at Sporting News, and author of incredible baseball stats, the coolest, strangest stats and facts in baseball history. Mr. Ryan Spader, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great. And thanks for having me. But one thing I will say, often credited with being the author of that book, but certainly just a co-author. My, you know, I got to give some credit where it's due. My good buddy Kevin Reavy had a huge part in putting that thing together.
Absolutely right. And what's interesting enough, it's Kevin and Ryan and the foreword by Wade Boggs. So here's a two-parter, Ryan, for you real quick. What's it like to be a successful author? Because we have a book on Amazon and we are the opposite of that. And how do you go about getting like Wade Boggs to do a foreword? So first off, how is it being successful?
I don't know if I would say all that. I mean, I still, you know, still got a ways to go if I want to make it in baseball some way. But the book did pretty well, and that was really cool. And a huge part of that was having Wade Boggs do the foreword. And, you know, how we got him to involved with it, it was kind of a funny thing. I do a fundraiser for Semper Fi Fund annually, and the first time I gave it a shot, I had like 15,000 or so followers. I thought I'd be able to raise a decent amount of money for veterans in need, and it wasn't very successful. I only raised about $500. So I reached out to Wade Boggs and asked him if he'd sign some baseballs for donors. And Wade's father was in the Marine Corps and the Air Force. He did, I believe, 24 total years. He was over at Guadalcanal during World War II. And Wade jumps right on the opportunity. He's always big on helping out veterans. And he signed a half dozen baseballs. And that $500 quickly went from $500 to $5,500. So that's kind of how I first got connected with Wade. And then when our publisher, you know, was on us to get a major league ball player to forward this book. And Kevin and I were tossing out names, thinking about who we were going to ask. One guy that we considered was Curt Schilling. Now, you know, Curt Schilling isn't the most popular guy, but I can tell you, knowing him personally, he's a much better person than the public leads you to believe. He's a you know, a decent man. But we opted not to ask Curt because we thought people wouldn't buy the book simply because his name was on it. Right.
Yeah. And that's a good call. We're out here in Arizona, and I used to work for a sports radio station out here, and Curt had a very good relationship actually with everybody there, and he treated everybody with actually a lot of respect, regardless of what you're saying. I do think he can get very off the wall, and he's kind of really gone with that brand. But to your point, though, he definitely is not, like, I don't think, a monster like people have made him out to be.
I agree, and that's often what I say. But you know what? So Kev asked me, he was like, "Hey, man, I know you've gotten in contact with Wade Boggs in the past. Why don't you ask him?" And I'm like, "Dude, there's no way I'm asking Wade Boggs. I'm not bothering this guy. He's already helped me out so much with the fundraiser. There's no way." And our publisher persisted. They're like, "We need somebody. We need a name. We need somebody. We need to know who's going to forward it." And they, you know, they wanted a major league ball player. So finally, I caved and I sent Wade Boggs like a 1,400 word email. It took me like 4 hours to write. I'm like, this is before his number got retired and everything. And I'm like telling him, you know, we're going to get the Red Sox to retire your number, all this stuff. And it's going to be a huge push for you getting the respect you deserve from that organization, all this stuff. And the guy responded to my email in probably 10 minutes. And it was just the shortest and sweetest response. He was just like, "Hey, Ryan, hope you're well. Sure, I'll do it, Wade." And I was just like, "You've got to be kidding me." He was right on board. Such a cool dude. And I think he just kind of likes doing things and staying in the public eye, the good graces of, you know, baseball fans. I mean, you know, he's done the in addition to my book, he's done Always Sunny, an episode with them. He's done
that was so great.
Yeah,
that episode was so great.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And he's just such a good dude. So it was just really kind of him to, you know, wanting to be involved with our little project. And he gave us a fantastic foreword. Some of these quotes he put in there were, you know, magnificent. So it just really, really was an honor to have Wade do that for us. And even cooler from that is, you know, kind of developed some sort of friendship with Wade Boggs. So, you know, that's always pretty cool, too.
That is really cool. You know, one thing I think it's interesting here, and I don't know if people realize this. I bet plenty of people do, but that Ryan is actually also, you're still active U.S. Marine. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's incredible. My father was a Navy, and I know Bogmans was in the military as well. Our guy, John Imler, was, I believe, a Marine, and he hooked us up. I think that's all cool. And where I'm getting
gotta
to this.
Say is a Marine the Welsh.
Is a Marine. I'm sorry.
Never say was a Marine.
I'm very, very sorry about that. Yeah.
You got that right.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, Bog, you would know. But one of the things I think that's interesting in hearing you talk is there's a couple things is, first off, I think that's very cool. You know, the amount of stuff that you have going on and putting a charity into that and working that is very great. But also, there's something in there that I don't know if this has happened a lot in over your time in your career, but it does seem like there's a run of like you taking those chances or even you just speaking up and it's working. That happened with Wade Boggs. You just recently had, I followed it and I thought it was very interesting where there was a gentleman who had tweeted you about helping his daughter, his 6-year-old daughter who had a muscularity issue in her hands and she couldn't like squeeze gloves. And he tweeted you and you retweeted it. And it delved to the realm where you had Lance McCullers and Kevin Youkilis and you had the team. You had, or it was Wilson Gloves coming out and saying, you know, we want to help with this. I mean, I think that impact is pretty interesting from you. I think that, you know, I don't know how much you recognize like, wow, you know, I'm at a place where not only at one point I got Wade Boggs to be on the book, but like I'm helping people just by simply going out and the internet is actually being a good thing for once.
Well, again, this guy, I really don't know anything about gloves. And the way I look at it is like, you look at that little girl. I mean, you saw the picture. She's just a cute little kid who wants to play baseball. So I'm of the school thought, you know, games for everybody. If somebody wants to play baseball, let them play baseball. And, you know, she's had this unfortunate, I guess, disability. And for some reason, I honestly don't know anything about gloves. I don't know what made this gentleman, Hunter, his name is, reach out to me. But I just thought that maybe I could do some good and help out. You know, I know a couple of ball players, so I thought that if it got in their hands, maybe some of their glove companies would reach out and try to help this guy out. And they did. It was pretty cool. I think he had Rawlings, Wilson, and then this other smaller time Bradley Gloves trying to help out. And he said that they've since you know, been in contact with him. They're trying to figure something out. So hopefully it works out so that you know, she can play T-ball this year. But I agree with you. It's a lot of times social media is just a horrible, horrible thing. I mean, people developing these opinions off tweets and, you know, you rip apart an athlete because they say something you don't like and whatever it may be. But, you know, it can be used for good. And, you know, you see a lot of that with guys like McCullers, Kevin Youkilis, Cody Ashe, you know, any number of these ball players who are just good dudes and just want to help people out. And that was a situation where, fortunately, this guy was able to get in touch with people who maybe can make something happen for his little girl.
Yeah, it was very cool. And thanks to you. Thanks to you. I thought it was very cool.
Speaking of social media, I saw that you went to the Babe Ruth Museum recently. That seemed like a lot of fun. And the Welsh and I here always get into arguments about how good Babe Ruth would be as a player right now. I mean, obviously, statistically, you know this. He's one of the all-time best. And, you know, and he also pitched, which a lot of people don't realize. He'd probably be in the Hall of Fame just as a pitcher, even if he didn't hit. So can you kind of school the Welsh on this and tell him how good Babe Ruth would be even if he was playing now?
Hey, I'm going to get killed here. I just want to point this out. I'm going to get killed here for this. There's arguments that, yes, I'm the person that plays the like, it's great. You know, he was great for his time, but does it mean he's the greatest of all time? I know I'm in the wrong here. So, Ryan, I leave it to you to destroy me here.
Well, I mean, statistically, and what he did for the game, I mean, the live ball era is very much so the Babe Ruth era. I mean, the guy was hitting more home runs than entire teams. And I'm kind of, you know, stuck in between, I would say, the two arguments because, I mean, look at with the mile, world record was in a mile in 1915, William, and it was like 4:12, right? You got a high school kids who can run that nowadays. So do I think that Babe Ruth could be, you know, frozen 100 years ago and then wake up and participate today? Probably not at that level, but when you look at the numbers, like even the adjusted numbers, OPS plus, you look at his ERA plus as a pitcher. I mean, the guy was unbelievable for his time and for all time, really. His OPS plus, greatest of all time by far. And then you got an ERA plus. He was that was better than Nolan Ryan. I mean,
Jesus.
It's really, really, really absurd how good of a ball player he was. And, you know, what he did for the game. I mean, Babe Ruth, during the Great Depression, did very much so what Mark McGwire did in the mid-90s for baseball, you know, bringing interest back to the game after the strike. And I don't think that, you know, he would hit 60 home runs today. I mean, I use the mile thing for example, but, you know, guys just weren't throwing as hard. It's just people are evolving. But we also can't discount what he did do. I mean, we're not going to go 100 years from now and discount Barry Bonds' stats, or, you know, maybe some people do because of their PED aversion, but that's an entirely different conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, as human beings physically evolve, you know, you're going to have differences throughout time, throughout generations. So I'm kind of, like I said, I'll play both sides of the fence on that one.
I feel like you're with me, Ryan, because like that's always been the argument here, is because we'll talk about best of all time and I'll get like Bogman will just throw out, he'll be like Babe Ruth, and I'm like, no, he's not to me. He's not the best of all time. In the era, it's one of the best performances, but when I have to kind of go off, I'm going to go off of stats, I'm going to go off of my eyes, I'm going to go off of everything we know in the grand scope of all players, I have a hard time putting a guy at
you
in
hate the movie The Babe.
No,
so
I, well,
you'll never
no.
like you'll
like
never
John
like
Goodman.
Babe Ruth. It's fine.
Like
you can
John
admit
Goodman.
That. It's okay.
But what I'm saying is I have a hard time making it a definitive that he's the greatest player of all time, regardless of what he did prior in that time. When you look at some of the accomplishments that players are doing nowadays, like you talk about Barry Bonds, regardless of the PED stuff, what Barry Bonds did is like it's insanity to me. So I have a hard time making it a declarative. Boom, he is the greatest of all time. So I feel like but he's still one of the best players of all time if you look at the grand scope of baseball. So Spader, I think you and I are kind of in the same realm.
Well, I generally say when somebody asks me who I think the greatest of all time is, it's so hard of a question to answer. So I usually go with like a top three, and I really can't order them, and that's usually Barry Bonds, Ted Williams, and Babe Ruth. So you got guys from three different generations of baseball there. And I just don't think that you can compare their abilities to each other, but statistically you can look at adjusted stats and their era, their the competition that they were playing against. I mean, one argument that people often like to say is, of course, Babe Ruth played during segregation era.
Yes.
And that's something that has to be considered, of course. But
yeah,
what then they don't consider is the fact that there are half as many teams then. You know, so
I did
with half as many teams, you're going to have a stronger player pool, just logically. So, you know, there's many different things that have to be considered when you're trying to talk about who is the greatest of all time. And like I said, I have a hard time saying one guy over another guy, especially across eras. So I usually go with that top three.
In regards to the book, it doesn't even necessarily have to be about the book, though, Ryan. It could be about kind of just in general. But do you have a stat that stands out for its uniqueness in your mind? Maybe working on the book, maybe the length of time you've, you know, put into building a stat, or just one that's maybe got a lot of attention. Is there something in that realm, maybe while even just doing the book, that just stands out to you? Like, wow. Like, I noticed one even in like the first realm of your book where it was talking about how Jose Altuve and 5'5", and like the last guy was like 1897. I think his name was Keller or something like that. Like, that stuff is wild to me. Like, is there any of that stands out to you?
A lot of the Tony Gwynn stuff is probably some of my most popular stuff, and it's really unfortunate because the time at which I sort of took off on Twitter was when Tony Gwynn had passed away.
Yeah.
But I guess in a way it's a positive to be able to celebrate what an asset he was to baseball, not just with his bat, but also his personality. I mean, the guy lit rooms up. But specifically, we pay a little tribute to Edgar Martinez in the Mariners chapter, and it's because Kevin and I both believe that Edgar should be in the Hall of Fame, and he doesn't get. There's such an odd stigma that we associate with designated hitters that for some reason doesn't get associated with closers or starting pitchers even, who are only playing every fifth day. And it really doesn't make much sense to me. So off that, talking of Edgar Martinez and Tony Gwynn, Edgar Martinez would have to return to baseball and go 0 for 660 without reaching base safely for his career on-base percentage to dip below Tony Gwynn's career on-base percentage. So I was fortunate enough to be able to talk with Edgar recently, and I told him that stat, and he didn't believe me. He was like, no, that doesn't it doesn't make sense. And I'm like, I promise you, man, that is how good your numbers were. And he's just such a humble guy, didn't want to talk about himself at all. He was, you know, I would try to speak to him about some of his numbers, and he would start asking me questions about, oh, well, what about Roberto Clemente and Carlos Beltran? You know, these other guys who were his from Puerto Rico as well, that he grew up looking up to or played with. You know, Beltran, he played with towards the beginning of Beltran's career, and he saw a really special player there, something we've all gotten to see with Beltran, who, you know, probably should end up being in the Hall of Fame himself. But the Edgar push was something that began before the book, went into the book, and then, you know, really picked up this year with Brock Raines getting the Hall of Fame last year, due in large part to what Jonah Carey did for him. Then, you know, this year he was on his ninth year. Next year is his final year. So hopefully he'll get his final 18 votes that he needs to make the Hall of Fame there.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
You're listening to In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League Podcast Network. Find all their shows and more of what you've heard at InThisLeague.com.
Let's talk fantasy baseball.
I know you want to talk some more numbers, so the one thing that people often say is like, yeah, Edgar Martinez is great, David Ortiz. David Ortiz was a great slugger, and I don't want to take anything away from him, but Edgar Martinez was a far better hitter. I mean, David Ortiz has the highlight reel, the highlight reel postseason career, and the three World Series, which I always say are team accomplishments. You can never associate that with an individual, but he would have to return to baseball, Ortiz would, and reach base in 665 straight plate appearances to pass Edgar Martinez in on-base percentage. And that's absurd to me. A full season, if you're a fan of the WAR statistic, a full season played by Edgar Martinez, so 162 games, is worth 234 games played by David Ortiz. So
man,
that kind
wow.
of shines some light on just how much better of a hitter Edgar Martinez was. And then, you know, the last, if you just look at something as basic as a career slash line. Edgar Martinez was 312, 418, 515. David Ortiz had just one season in which he matched each leg of that. So it really shows you that how much of a better overall ball player that Martinez was than Ortiz. Having said that, both Hall of Famers.
I want to give you credit too, because I swear to God, like, you're just like staring at, you're not even looking at our show sheet, but you're like, you know it. Cause like we were both kind of sitting here and writing notes as you're going. And we're like, well, you know, Ortiz versus Edgar is just a great question. And I think if you were to go and this is why, you know, you are doing this great work. And I think it's so important that you're saying that, cause you're blowing our mind with some of this, but I would guess if you go ask, you know, 10 people, you know, which deserves to be in the Hall of Fame if the other can't, I would bet you, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, I bet you 8 out of 10 are probably going to say Ortiz, just maybe by recency bias. But you laying out some of that is fascinating.
Yeah, probably 9 out of 10, honestly.
Yeah.
If, you know, if not even more. And it's the numbers are just, I mean, the thing that people often say, it drives me nuts, because in 1973, it was decided the designated hitter was going to be a part of the American League. I personally despise the designated hitter. I like National League Baseball. I think it's the only pure form of baseball. I love watching pitchers hit. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I just enjoy it, right? But having said that, I understand that the designated hitter has been part of baseball for since 1973. So why shouldn't it be part of the Hall of Fame? And why do we want to have, I shouldn't say we, but a number of writers want to have this super non-inclusive Hall of Fame. It's just odd to me. I mean, if you've ever been to the Hall of Fame, it's just a great piece of, like, step into a time machine and look at baseball history. So why wouldn't we want that to be something that's slightly more inclusive? Now, I'm not saying 10% of players in history should be in, but, like, it probably closer to 1.5 to 2% versus the less than 0.5% that some of these guys seem to want.
Man. Yeah, and I hate the whole, you know, well, this guy didn't get it on the first ballot, so this guy can't. You know, I mean, if the guy's a Hall of Famer, put him in whenever. He's a Hall of Famer, right? I hate it when that stuff happens. How do you find these stats so fast, by the way? Do you have some gigantic database, or have you already looked all of them up?
Is
or,
that your brain? Is that database called your brain?
Do you have, like, the Ichiro brain where you can do all these kind of crazy stats immediately?
Well, a lot of them are just research from the past that it just kind of stick in my head. I got to give credit to Baseball Reference. They have a fantastic tool. It's very resourceful in creating small databases for Excel. You convert to CSV, the Play Index. FanGraphs is fantastic. I use them often. You alluded to it earlier, the launch angle and StatCast stuff. Darren Willman's Baseball Savant website is just incredible in terms of building databases, and then I can sort of, you know, cross and combine a bunch of them. But most of the numbers, they just stick with me. It's hard to make sense of, but I'm not a very smart person. I don't consider myself an intellectual, but numbers for whatever reason they just stay with me, and so a lot of research I've done in the past just kind of sticks with me, and it's something that I can usually talk on.
I love that people are like, hey, you remember that thing you said last week? That was so funny. And I'm like, dude, I don't remember what I said like 30 minutes ago. So that's incredible when you can remember those type of things. All right, I want to get it down to a player here, and I got a couple different examples to try to make this question make the most sense. But for you, when you're evaluating players, and let's take Aaron Judge for an example. And you want to see if, like, okay, A, the player is a regression candidate. That's a very common thing, especially whether it's real baseball or fantasy, whatever it is. Is this player a regression candidate? Is this player a one-year wonder? Or you could go and take a look at a guy like Rhys Hoskins, and you could potentially evaluate, is this one half enough to tell the full story of this player? What are the things that jump out to you most? You know, many of you are probably going to look at, like, BABIP, second, first half splits, but how do you go and approach when you are evaluating players, be it, I just use Judge and Hoskins for a couple different examples here. How do you go about that?
Well, let me go in the opposite direction that you did there. In a player who, you know, regresses to the norm, but in a good way. And that was one guy that I'll mention that I wrote something on for Sporting News is Manny Machado.
Okay.
And if you recall, he had that, a horrible first half in terms of his numbers.
Yeah.
But if you looked at a little bit further beyond just that slash line, it was very clear that it was just a bad luck thing. And I mean, luck has its place in baseball, and sometimes players, hit that bad luck. I often use Wade Boggs as an example because of that. 1992. He had a 259 batting average after he was batting 345 to that point. But, you know, he ended up not being awarded a contract by the Red Sox, which he was promised, by the way. And, catches a lot of flack because he ended up signing with the Yankees, but the Red Sox didn't tender him a contract. And you mentioned Babbitt. Well, you can't really look at the, you know, the launch angles and exit velocity of Wade Boggs in his career, because we just didn't have that radar technology then. But you can look at something like Babbitt. And in 1992, when he had that 259 average, his Babbitt was 261, which was almost 100 points shy of his career 360 Babbitt. So, you know, you just knew from looking at that that was a really a bad luck thing. And then Manny, the example that I use, his Babbitt coming into this year was 310. When I wrote the article on him, it was 239. And then with some of the new age stuff that we can look into as well, is how hard is the guy hitting the ball off the bat. So at the time that I wrote this article, Manny Machado led baseball with 93 balls hit at least 100 miles per hour off the bat. Second place was Aaron Judge, who had that unbelievable first half with one fewer. He had 92. And then to round out the top five, you had Marcell Ozuna, George Springer, and Carlos Correa. And then you have all these guys with sparkling slash lines. You know, every single one of them was batting over 310 with a slugging of over 550. But then you got Manny Machado, who's on the top, batting 230 and 445. So when I looked into this, you know, the Babbitt, the exit velocity, any number of things, Manny Machado, where he was hitting the balls, his spray charts. I mean, he had so many hard hit balls that were being eaten up in the shortstop hole. And you look at all this stuff, all this evidence, and you can sort of do a predictive analysis type thing where you can say, hey, this bad luck, it's just bad luck. And sometimes people just or ball players just run into it. I mean, you can have bad luck over the course of 300 at bats. You know, a couple go your way versus the pitcher's way, and all of a sudden that you know, that horrible slash line starts looking, you know, a little better. And for Manny, of course, he made me look a lot smarter than I am by having an incredible second half. And, you know, he really rounded out a season. And now he's one of the most sought after players in baseball in terms of a trade commodity. One thing that one thing that never slumps is a glove. And we all know how valuable Manny Machado's glove is, whether he is playing shortstop or third base. So even if he finished the entire season with that horrible slash line, which he didn't, he would still be valuable for his defense.
What about if I ask you the same type of a question on pitchers? How do you find the bad luck with pitchers, or how do you kind of determine if a guy is a one-year wonder, or if he's going to be the real deal the next season?
That's a great question. I think it's still easier with hitters, but pitchers, you can look at all kinds of things. Is this guy having strikes taken away from him? I mean, we can determine with this radar technology, is a ball a strike? That's why a lot of people want robot umpires, right? And you can look at things like how many strikes has this pitcher had taken away from him, or how many good luck strikes does he get? Because does he have a catcher who's incredible at framing, like a guy like Russell Martin? Russell Martin, I don't know if you read Travis Salchick's book, Big Data Baseball. It was awesome, about the Pirates when they won 98 games. But Russell Martin is one of the best in baseball at stealing strikes, and he does so because he'll frame the pitch, and then as the pitcher releases, he drops his mitt and then lifts it to pull the ball back into the zone. And it's an incredible skill that he has, because it really, you trick the umpire. Instead of a catcher who is going to frame the pitch and then maybe lunge for a ball that's low, that makes it look like it's not a strike. It's just an incredible talent that he has. But then you can also look at, you can look at Babbitt for a pitcher. Like, is it so much greater than what average is? You can look at things like FIP, fielder independent pitching, and then you can adjust those for the era, which is a great tool. But it just measuring a pitcher's season or career by something just like ERA or win-loss, it's just not the right way to do it nowadays. And statistics have showed us that.
Have you found, this is a broad question, and I wouldn't even know how to answer it, but have you found, like, there's this, and I had mentioned it before we got on air, there's this kind of new era of stat heads. It's the stat cast era where, you know, we're looking at exit velocity, launch angle, people are going home run to fly ball, swinging strike percentage. You get a lot of those things, maybe evaluating hitters and pitchers. A couple of years back, it felt like a lot of people, and maybe this is just the advent of analytics getting deeper and getting more mainstream. But, you know, like 5 years ago, people looking a lot of BABIP, FIP, WAR, you know, those were things people are looking at. Is there anything, like, do you see a different accuracy level when you're digging into these stats? Or do you see this as just more pieces to a bigger statistical pie, you know, to get ourselves in a better place? Or do you think some of these are, you know, it's a trend? Like, I'm not saying StatCast or anything like that is a trend, but do you see some of these being more trendy as we go by, or are there more kind of locked down, this is the stuff that really gets me to where I'm trying to get to?
If it is a trend, I would say it's trending upwards. I mean, look at, you go back to 2001 with the, money ball, right? I mean, on base percentage was like that. That was the new age statistic, and you know, nowadays it's a great way to measure a hitter, and I do that with, you know, Edgar Martinez example I cited earlier. But that is not revolutionary by any means, and I think that these stats and the ways to measure players will continue to evolve exponentially until essentially what we're trying to do is just get closer to a true value, a true estimation of, because really that's all that a lot of this is, like wins above replacement. It's an estimate of what a player's value is in terms of wins above who would, you know, replacement level player. And as time goes on, these estimations will get better and better. I think the radar technology has been a huge factor in that. We're starting to see better fielding statistics, something that, you know, is truly not understood is just how valuable is a fielder for a fielding prowess, like how valuable is a skilled defensive player. And I think that you see a lot of writers who, for example, would vote Omar Vizquel over Edgar Martinez in the past Hall of Fame election. I think a lot of them do that almost in a way of saying like, oh, I'm in the know. I know how valuable fielding is. And it's like, no, you don't. No, nobody really does. My school of thought is, I think Omar was a great player, but in terms of fielding, shortstops who are perhaps like the greatest fielding shortstops of all time are probably not that much more valuable to a team than just like a really great shortstop. Like, for example, the example I've been using is Jimmy Rollins, who nobody's probably going to say is a Hall of Famer, but was he that much worse of a fielder than, say, Omar Vizquel? Because, I mean, he was definitely a better hitter, but is there that much more value added by having Omar's glove there than Jimmy's? I don't know. And a lot of these writers, you know, they don't know, and we don't have a true answer to that. But hopefully in the future, as things continue to evolve, we can get closer to that, you know, absolute zero, where we can determine a player's value, whether that's with his bat, with his arm, or with his glove.
Well, he is Ryan Spader. You can find him on Twitter at the Ace of Spader, SPAEDER, co-author of the incredible baseball stats, the coolest, strangest stats and facts in baseball history. You guys should go check that out. You can get content over at the Sporting News. And Ryan, hey, we just appreciate you taking the time out. Busy time. You got a lot going on, but you took a time out to talk some baseball, have some fun with us, and we are very, very appreciative of it. And shout out to our boy, mutual friend, John Immler, for setting this up.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we finally got to do this. And like I said, hopefully I can get down there. Maybe we'll catch a baseball game, have a beer or something.
You got the open invitation for us anytime you get, because you're out in the East, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, come out here in the nice weather. It's like 75 out here right now. Sunny. It's beautiful. Come on
35
down.
Out here. So.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, Ryan Spader, we appreciate it, my friend.
Take it easy. Have a good one, guys.
In This League Overtime. Want more? Go to inthisleague.com.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
In This League Overtime. Want more? Go to InThisLeague.com. Here's Bogman and the Welsh.
Let's talk fantasy baseball.
You want to punch me right now, but you won't.
Why don't you punch me in the face?
Punch me in the face!
Hey, Derek, you know what's always good for shoulder pain?
What?
If you lick my...
In This League.
Right, enough about me. I mean, come on. We don't need to talk about my BP anymore. But we do need to talk stats, and that's what we're going to do all day long and all day tomorrow. I'm excited for people to get to hear Ryan Spader. It's, you know, a little bit less of maybe a hardcore fantasy conversation, but it's a really good baseball conversation. And I would say what's so interesting about statistics is how they're so important in every facet of baseball, you know, not just fantasy. I mean, fantasy, it is so important, but just, you know, how the average baseball fan consumes, you know, the statistics are something that can merge the fantasy fan with the guy that's like, screw off fantasy guys. Well, it merges them.
The best stat is WAR, and we don't even use WAR.
What is it good for?
What is it good for? We don't use it for fantasy at all. But to know how, I mean, the only thing that you could really use WAR for in fantasy is to know who is going to be staying on the field a lot. You know what I mean? So we don't use it for fantasy at all. That's why when and the Welsh's favorite thing I ever did on Twitter, I believe, was a guy was, you know, he was talking about somebody's WAR stats.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, really? You playing a lot of war leagues, do you?
And it was the best because it was like trying to make a point. He's like, well, come on. He's got like a 7.6 war. And it was like, and then you busted out with that line. And he's like, yeah, those war leagues. And then funny enough, I did tell you, I saw somebody doing like a war league this year. Like that's all. That was the only stat. Like they draft a bunch of players and it's for war. And I was like, come on. Come on, guys.
Come
you can't
on,
do
guy.
All that. Come on. But let's talk about some news. There was definitely some stuff that went down over the weekend. Mm. Even so much stuff that went down as we were doing our Ryan Spader interview, and we are talking to you right now. And if you know what I'm talking about, you will know just the true depths of sadness because...
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
The empire known as the Boston Red Sox are reportedly... going to sign JD Martinez, and I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, you know, it was a horrible tease that they gave us over the whole summer. And, you know, I said this the other day, as soon as they announced the humidor, I said, I think that's it. I think that there's no chance for us to sign JD Martinez.
I wish
think
we
that
could
was
have
part
had...
of it. I think that's why they held off on announcing the humidor, was to see if they could get JD Martinez back, even if it was on a one-year deal. And obviously,
that's all I want to know. All I want to know in the world. I just don't think it meant one thing to him. I think the Diamondbacks were never going to go over a certain amount. The Red Sox would. And it was just Scott Boras placating the whole freaking time. I think it was always going to happen. I don't think it played anything into it. But I will admit this to you. I don't think it helped anything either.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that it's weird timing. You know, this is announced.
Like a week difference.
Is it even a full week, though?
Ish. It was announced last week.
6 or 7 days, but that's maybe you probably have that much time to knock out this deal. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I love JD Martinez in either one of these spots, and maybe with the humidor, as far as fantasy goes, he is a little bit better in Boston with that lineup, hitting in the middle of it. This completely and wholly screws over Jackie Bradley Jr., I think.
Well, JD, I think JD is going to be a predominant DH as far as I knew. And that was one of the things that a lot of people assumed would let the Diamondbacks kind of jump in a bit was that, you know, that they can offer, hey, you're going to just be the everyday left fielder. You're going to be out there every single time, where the Red Sox are looking at a situation where he's probably full time DHing. And then Jackie Bradley, I guess, is going to stick in the outfield now, as of right now, because
well,
it's going to be...
here's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. As of right now, Jackie Bradley Jr. is absolutely a starting outfielder, but they signed Eduardo Nunez to a one-year deal, too. So Dustin Pedroia comes back and slides over to second, where Nunez is going to start the year. What do you do with Nunez? I know he can play third, he can play short, he can play wherever, but it looks like that open spot is probably Jackie Bradley's spot, and you would rather have Eduardo Nunez over Jackie Bradley in your everyday lineup, right?
Yeah, I just don't think that's what they're going to do. I think the Red Sox, that's one of the main problems where you look at, you go and look at Eduardo Nunez, is he's going to be a super utility player. So he's going to be all over the place. I don't think he's going to have a home. One day he's going to be at shortstop. One day he's going to be over at third. One day he's going to be over at second. One day at a time. And then he's going to go in the outfield. I don't see it. If anything, I don't see it negatively hardcore affecting any one of the players outside of just saying, like, it's just going to, like, affect everybody on a day-to-day basis.
Well, maybe, I mean, if there's a major injury, right? Like if Xander Bogaerts breaks his leg or something,
sure,
Nunez is going to slide in at short and play every day. If Rafael Devers comes up and is terrible, he's going to get some time at third. If Pedroia gets hurt again, which is a giant possibility because he's an older dude and he was hurt last year, he's going to slide in at second. So he can play everything.
Here's what I would love.
If you're looking in a normal lineup, the two guys that are affected the most by this deal are Jackie Bradley Jr. and Hanley Ramirez, because now it's probably a platoon between, you know, Hanley against lefties, Moreland against righties at first instead of one of them DHing. And Eduardo Nunez, if Jackie Bradley ain't hitting, is going to be playing the outfield in his spot.
Well, and a couple things I was going to say is, one thing I would love is if they consider Devers at first, but you're right. Hanley Ramirez would be displaced, and I don't think they're going to do anything with that. So you got to assume Hanley is going to – well, I mean, dude, you are right. There are just so many factors here, because if they're not comfortable with Hanley's first base skills, I mean, what are they going to do? Put JD out in left and then Benintendi in center field, and Bradley gets displaced. Is Moreland going to have time? My assumption, Hanley at first, JD DHing, and then you're going to have Eduardo Nunez – hopefully getting 4 out of 5 games, and one of those will be probably at the expense of Jackie Bradley. One of those will be at the expense of potentially Xander Bogaerts. And Jackie Bradley and Eduardo Nunez, you're right, are probably, you know, less of the full time you know, beneficiaries that we would like to see. But at the end of the day, though, JD Martinez is going to a spot that could not be like any better than him. What's interesting, and you have to really dig into his stats, because if you just go and look, you know, we're going to be talking, you know, home road splits, stuff like that here. Last year at home, he had a 355 average, but that was also across two different teams. His away was 251. So regardless, when he wasn't at home, he was struggling. But where is the Diamondbacks? That's what I need to see, because how many of those homers were with the Diamondbacks? Because he had 27 home runs last year. And with the Diamondbacks, why don't they ever break this down so I could see this?
Baseball Reference does. So I'm going
to
skip over there.
Go to Baseball Reference for me real quick. Because 27 home runs is a lot. And I know he murdered it in Arizona. How many of those 27 were in Arizona? Because I want to say like 21 of them were.
He hit 29 homers. Total with the Diamondbacks.
Now, are you able to check how many of those were at home?
Yeah, let me look. Let me see. I'm looking at the splits page. Let's see. Where is this? Righties, lefties. See, they don't have it home away broken down by team. So,
all right. Well, either way, a lot to a lot. That's the big thing here. I don't know
why. Four of those were in Dodger Stadium. I know that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and one game. Those away ones. He had 18 away. So you just got to assume he's going to a hitter's park that is going to continue to benefit him. And you did see some odd, you know, struggles as far as like going away with the average, but he still hit 18 homers in 215 at bats. He was still able to hit that many homers, 18 of them. And his first and second half average splits, they're near identical, 299 to 306. I really like his odds to be. I mean, I'm back on mid-second round potential for him.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great spot for him to be. We also had Eric Hosmer sign with the Padres. Opposite effect for JD Martinez.
Good point.
Eric Hosmer. Last year, Hosmer, 318 with 98 runs, 25 homers, and 94 RBI with six swipes. The swipes may go up because the Padres do steal a lot of bases, and those teams that are on the lower end tend to steal more. But
I wonder if the RBI opportunities could not drop drastically, because if they have guys, well, if they have like Margot, and maybe you got like maybe potentially Will Myers in front of him. If Myers is hitting two, Margot's leading off, two base stealers that can put themselves in scoring positions. Hosmer, though, the home run totals, it's hard to project him. I mean, even I don't want to say not even coming close, but like probably going to be four or five below what he did last year.
Yeah. What do you think? Like 19, 20, like
what,
somewhere
have,
26 in that
last year?
25.
I want to say like 21, 22 is what jumps out to me.
Yeah, I guess. He's just never been a gigantic power hitter anyway.
He's hit
25 the last 2 years, and that's his career high.
There's also some decent hitter parks going into the NL. You know, he's going to be facing off
he'll be
Arizona,
going to Colorado.
Colorado, right. Exactly. Philly. You know, there's going to be some spots.
I mean, you know, right now the other decent players in his lineup are Will Myers and Manny Margot. Last year, he had Lorenzo Cain, yeah, Whit Merrifield, and Mike Moustakas hitting in the lineup with him.
I mean, he goes down a bit, man. Like, what is his ADP? Like, I want to, like, off the top of my head, I feel like it's been in, like, the late 60s, maybe early 70s.
I think it's closer to the 70s. I can take a look at that real quick while you pad for me.
Yeah, here. I mean, just pending where it is what the key is. Like, I just feel like I'm looking at a guy that at one time was seen as like a safer option, you know, quote unquote. You know, hey, this is the safer option. You missed out on the nice Reese Hoskins, E5, those last kind of bit of guys that you want to go and target Hosmer, especially if you maybe Hosmer was one of those first basemen you got if you ended up getting like Giancarlo Stanton, Judge, maybe both of them together, and you're just trying to pair out your average, but still getting some of those corner infield stats. He was
76
there. I mean, that sounds about right. I'm not sure he's going to fall that much further for me, even though he's in San Diego. Like, how much further were you going to really let him fall?
Well, the guys right above him as far as hitters go are Domingo Santana, Justin Turner, Gene Segura, Billy Hamilton.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's really interesting. Domingo Santana, there's a lot of chatter that believe the Arizona Diamondbacks might make a play for Domingo Santana.
Yeah, now that JD's gone,
that they want an outfielder. They want to fill that hole.
Gaping hole.
And they've got pitching depth. And they might put out a guy like Patrick Corbin. So you might see and this has been rumored, you might see a Corbin plus for Domingo Santana trade coming here soon. And if Domingo Santana is a full-time starter in Arizona, I mean, we're just back. We're back on the Domingo Santana hype train.
Right. So let me take a look at first baseman. Let's see. He's going ahead of like Kutch and Bogarts and all those type of guys too. So let me look at first. He's going one spot below, or I guess he's right below Will Myers. The guys ahead of him are Myers, Posey, and E5. You take all those guys over Hosmer?
Posey's a question. I'm not sure if I would. I might.
Posey's going 14 spots ahead of him at 62. I'm looking at Fantrax, and a lot of those are two catcher leads.
Yeah, I'm just not on catchers that much. I'm probably taking Hosmer ahead. But
how about the guys below him, Miggy or Hosmer? I think I go Hosmer.
I think I go Miggy.
Matt Olson.
This is starting to come down to. I mean, I would
Ian
take
Desmond's
Hosmer
down here.
I'd take Justin Hosmer Smoke over both of those guys. But if you were to tell me, like, you know, player debate style, Hosmer at 76 or Miggy at 85, I'd take Miggy.
Yeah, Miggy's going off at 91.
Yeah, I'll take Miggy.
76 and 91. Ian Desmond's going off at 125. Then
Boy.
You get into, you know, Justin Smoke and Carlos Santana and Greg Bird, guys like that.
Well, interesting enough about Ian Desmond also is it looks like he's going to be the predominant left fielder is what the conversation is because
I like that.
Yeah, they're saying that Ryan McMahon is going to get a shot at first base, which I think is a huge plus. I think that makes him a 12-man standard pickup. He doesn't qualify, but he can play third, second, first, outfield, big bat, got some big swing. But with how he changed his game up from 16 to 17, because we saw him in the Arizona Fall League in 16, how he was able to redevelop his game, this guy has the potential to put up like big numbers. I mean, look what Mark Reynolds did last year, and this is like a much better hitter. So I'm in on Ryan McMahon right now, speaking of like cheap first base options.
And that takes a steamy dump all over David Dahl. You know, everyone's drafting David Dahl. He's coming into the sleeper type name again. But I mean, you got to realize I don't know if David Dahl is going to start with the Rockies as far as the season starts. He probably will because Parra is going to be on the DL with the
Tapia.
Broken hand. But Tapia, right, exactly. So it's going to be Blackman, Tapia, and Desmond out in the outfield. And David Dahl is probably going to be a bench bat if he's not already hurt by the time the season starts because the dude is constantly hurt.
And the Rockies
I got him in a dynasty league. I'm going to hold on to him because the guy has all kinds of upside, especially playing in Colorado. But I don't think that for my redraft leagues, I will have zero shares of redraft David Dahl. That's for sure.
Rockies were also keeping an eye and keeping in touch with Carlos Gonzalez. So that would be another thing that would muddy the whole situation. One last thing in the San Diego front is there are rumors now floating that the Padres might put Hunter Renfroe out there because Jose Perella, they kind of like at that spot. They've also got some other depth, and that Hunter Renfroe might be a trade target, especially if they want to go at some pitching or something like that. And also, you know, we're going to look at Hunter Renfroe when we talk about some stats here, and he stands out in a couple areas that aren't the best. There's another move that went down. CJ Cron was traded from the Angels to the Rays, which opened up and starts the Shohei Ohtani DH era. I would say that is a fact, and that is going down. Albert Pujols.
Yeah, Socha said that he's going to be Ohtani's going to be available to pinch hit and pinch run also. So, you know, they're going to the six-man rotation. They're taking a guy off out of the end of the bench. So,
and Pujols dropped like 15 pounds and wants to play a lot more first. So, and then you got Valbuena. So you're going to see a lot more Shohei Ohtani. But what that did is that opened up a pretty good opportunity for CJ Cron to go to first. But then the Rays, they cut Corey Dickerson, which upset our buddy Yancey Eaton. Also hurt our shirt sales of our C. Dick Run shirt, which you can get at our In This League shirt store.
Yeah, hopefully lands somewhere else. That's, you know, if he could land in backup, you know, a Boston or something and maybe play some first base. We like that.
Rumor was that the Braves are taking a look at him, which if that were to happen, what's going to make everyone cry is that could have a negative effect on the Ronald Acuna call update, which is probably going to be delayed a little bit in the first place, but it could delay it even more if that were to happen.